Hey, can I get some of that sad puppy music going here? Okay, cool, thanks. Every year, thousands of campaigns around the world are afflicted with severe cases of that guy. Someone you know may very well be dealing with silent yet terrifying symptoms. Excessive team killing, overly sexual character descriptions, and poor hygiene. Often these players creep into our lives gradually, leaving victims unaware of the dangers. For many, it may already be too late. But hope is not lost. We here at the GM Screen Foundation believe that with just a small donation of approximately 45 minutes of your time, you too can help protect those in need.
And welcome to our three-part mini-series on that guy.
Today we are working specifically on preventing the scourge upon all civilized lands known as the murder hobo.
The man who's... I say man. Actually, no. I was gonna say, it could technically be a woman.
No.
It's probably not.
They could be playing a woman.
They almost definitely are, and there were three paragraphs describing her cleavage.
I can't do it. Okay.
Tell me I'm wrong.
But, yes, fuck, I lost it.
Okay,
well, I want you to be wrong, you're not. Okay, so today we're talking about murder hobos and how to stop your campaign from descending into murder hobo ravagery. And by campaign, I mean either the one session of your carefully planned out world that got devoured by a bunch of hooting dipshits, or the series of encounters you continue to throw at these people you've long since stopped to consider friends, hoping against hope that at one point you will get past their incredibly overpowered and probably broken and cheating characters and finally destroy them.
That was far too much of a run-on sentence to have not happened to you at least four times.
Five times.
Am I the closest without going over?
Price is Right. It's not Price is Right. Never mind.
Yeah, you went one over me, you asshole. Enjoy Plinko, I guess.
Are you not allowed to go one over in Price is Right?
Well, you are, but it's the asshole move.
That's
because
right.
Unless you nailed it, they win.
I do appreciate the idea of gentleman's Price is Right. next round number.
Yeah, an increment of five. Don't be a dick about it.
Oh, those make me feel good in the brain.
Yeah. We should probably explain what a murder hobo even is, because otherwise this sounds kind of rude. And maybe a crime.
So murder hoboing is the tendency for players to get into a rut of caring basically just about their character's mechanical
ability
advancement.
To kill.
I would say ability to kill is kind of ancillary, because it's mostly just about gaining more experience and gold to the extent that they disregard everything else going on in the campaign world.
Oh, like that time I got a sword at the end of the first chapter of Neverwinter Nights and killed a bunch of NPCs so I'd be high enough level to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the time that Neverwinter Nights when I realized that most people didn't care that you killed people.
So you immediately...
I just started, like, murdering people because they were worth, like, 12 XP each, and then I finally met someone who was like, oh my god, you're a murderer, what's wrong with you? And I went, oh, I feel bad now. And
yeah,
then I restarted.
Or like that time that I still haven't played Neverwinter Nights.
It's
anyway.
Like when your players start seeing every NPC as an XP pinata.
So what is a murder hobo other than what sounds like a really, really bad thing to say in polite company? So murder...
I think it's like every other episode of Law & Order, but...
Well... You're not wrong.
So it's a colloquial term for characters who are... completely uninvested in the world in which they exist and are focused entirely on their own mechanical advancement. They're trying to get as much XP as necessary to level up and as much money as necessary to buy whatever the cool item they need for their build is. And they are basically just traveling from town to town, stabbing everything that could be considered XP worthy, whatever system you're in. And stealing everything that could be sold for money to get additional things.
Which we've all done at least once in one game somewhere.
Yeah, I think everyone's probably guilty of playing a murder hobo. And it kind of makes sense to have a character who's an adventurer who's just kind of like a wandering, like, job man, like a bounty hunter kind of fits this trope, a like wandering monster exterminator kind of fits this trope. You can play a character who could be considered a murder hobo without playing them as a murder hobo.
So it's somewhere between like The Witcher and Samurai Champloo or something.
Yeah. Right. I think the characters for Samurai Champloo are definitely murder hobos.
Well,
there is a lot of both of parts of that going on.
Well, the important part for them, and what I think sets them apart, is they do have like a goal in mind instead of just personal advancement after a certain point.
That's fair.
Which is kind of one of the symptoms of the problem, is that if your character has a single-minded devotion to achieving a goal, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Murder Hobo is usually focused on the player's goals, not the character's goals.
That's a great explanation.
It tends to come from a person who generally doesn't really care about the game at large. Like, part of it does come from an obsession purely with a mechanical advancement. Like, they're only here because they played a lot of, I don't know, like World of Warcraft, and they know that you need the bigger numbers.
World of Warcraft or Diablo or most of the earlier computer RPGs. And
Diablo's actually a much better example, yeah.
A lot of the newer ones, like you play Torchlight, and yes, I'm here with my dog to kill 10,000 items.
And even stuff like Monster Hunter fits into that, because the only gameplay loop in that is kill bigger number, kill bigger thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna kill you. Basically, like a murder tramp in that, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna kill you and use your pants and use your skin to make pants, and then kill you again with the pants
for shoulder pads.
Well, yeah, because you can't just have pants. That's ridiculous.
Gotta get that full set.
They are very well dressed.
They are, yes.
So we're very thoroughly dressed. I'm not sure I would qualify a lot of people for Monster Hunter as being well dressed.
So let's go ahead and get into the first step in preventing this kind of thing.
So the first step, and this starts, I would say, before the game has even started, you want to create a living world for your players to interact with. You want to, we've touched on pre-preparation before, but you want a world that they can ask questions about, and you can either have an answer or create an answer, and that they can feel like they have a space in to create their characters.
So if they have questions, give meaningful answers is what you're getting at.
And the corollary to that is that they should also have a backstory for their character. You can always require somebody to write, like, you know, 2 pages of backstory or something. That can be a lot for new players.
We did used to do that, though.
That was the standard. Some people did more who are usually will. But I'm going to keep name dropping. And you can't stop me. But,
This is pre-recorded.
But I've also done, like,
I think even 2 paragraphs.
Yeah, 2 paragraphs. You can have most RPGs actually have something for, like, filling out additional information on your character. Like, what are their hopes and dreams?
Oh, yeah. Who are their parents? Has those great tables you can use.
Yeah.
Yeah, that third page that I never pay attention to.
Well, yes, but
Wow, this sounded like a good idea in my head, and now it's terrifying. Ask your players to fill out, like, a dating profile for their characters.
That does sound terrifying, but I get it.
That's coming up next episode.
Yeah, well, like, what are their interests? How old are they? A little bit about their background.
Have them build a Tinder profile.
I'm going to swipe right on that dragon. I'll take his word.
We are learning some things about Matt today.
Confirm Scaly. But yeah, I think the best first step is you build your world, but the first preventative measure is always to make sure they're invested in their character. Because if a person who's just being a murder hobo, if their character dies, it's not, I feel like they're annoyed just because they lost their mechanical power, but they're not heartbroken, which can happen with a well-made character.
Yeah, they're annoyed that they have to start over again.
Right. They're not sad that their character's story came to an end, which is what would, if they're sad about that, they won't do something dumb like hauling off and punching a king or a guard.
Yeah.
Okay, no, this makes sense, because I feel like anyone who would get into the act of murder hoboing is essentially trying to win.
Yeah.
Like, they want to win this campaign.
This is a conversation I have with my parents on, like, a yearly basis when I bring up I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons, is the point of it is not to win. The point of it is to play stories together, or make stories together.
There's a line in, I think it's the Wise Man Sphere, where somebody talks about a game they're playing, and the person asks, you know, the person's like, how do I win this game? And somebody else goes, the point is not to win, the point is to play a beautiful game.
Right.
And that's true of a lot of very pretentious but impressive strategy games, and it's true of Dungeons & Dragons or other RPGs. The point is to create a story that everyone enjoyed.
Yeah, like, the beautiful part might be relative, because you brought that up, and I'm like, yeah, like that time that we started a professional goat wrestling ring.
Yeah. Hey, the fact that you invented the World Wrestling Federation in my game is amazing.
But no, you want to create beautiful stories, and the bones of a beautiful story is the world, and the meat and muscle and gristle is beautiful characters.
And I think the central tenet, the thing that you really, really need from a player is for them to understand why their character is an adventurer. Because it's not the kind of thing a sane and well-adjusted person decides to do.
That is true, yes.
So they need to know why they're an adventurer, and they need to know what their character hopes to get out of it.
And even if you can play a violent psychopath,
yeah,
but he needs to have a reason to be that.
Your character can have decided at some point that they want to be the best at killing and also the richest, but that's still going to put them in a position to make rational or irrational reasoned choices to further that goal, and that's a story. Much more than, oh man, that guy's worth 300 XP, I push him off a ledge.
Right.
You know, things like this always drags me back to a game I ran for a bit. I had a paranoia game going for a bit, which is perfect for this, because a lot of what we're getting at here is starting to be an issue with metagaming as a whole. Mm-hmm. Like, people will do things because I get bigger numbers out of it. Like, this will help me win. So in Paranoia, it's a, like, dystopian sci-fi parody game. Knowledge of the rules is punishable by death. If you, at the table, ever discuss something that is written in the rulebook, you will immediately be marked as treasonous and be put to death.
It's basically the best.
It's really good.
Yeah, so, like, it's a fun idea there of just... Like, it does kind of get a bit limiting, is the issue there, because you're basically preventing them from doing something that they might enjoy. Like, how do we deal with the fact that some people just enjoy being that asshole who's going to burn down the village because I'll level up afterwards?
You kick them out of your fucking group.
Well, or you sit them down and have an honest and earnest conversation with them and say, hey, look, I know this is what you enjoy, but here's... This is going to be another part about tone in the table tone, but step one is you sit them down and be like, hey, this isn't acceptable, but always give them a reason. This isn't acceptable because XYZ is a lot more understandable to a normal person than, hey, you can't do that.
Yeah, like, hey, you're making this not fun for everyone else.
And the goal is, of course, as always, to have fun.
I just let you guys burn down that village, though.
Look, that village had it coming.
Because you killed the paladin?
They didn't need it.
Was I in this one?
No.
I was there when we burnt down the monastery. But to be fair, they were evil.
This village was blameless.
That was from the Warhammer game with the gang burns down a monastery?
Got it.
No, it was the gang kills a monk. That was it.
That was a good time.
Yeah, that game just kind of had It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia title cards on every session.
I had a lot of fun... And a lot of White Russians. So, like, I remember several very impressive and fun high points from that game, and some of the parts that kind of got a little wavy on me.
That sounds about right.
We did burn down that monastery, though, and Tal is his own dad. Don't listen to anyone else.
Oh, that
Oh, dear.
That was interesting.
It's a good time.
But, yeah, so I think the core of this first step is having your players make characters they're invested in. And if they do want to go down the path of murder hoboism, at least make them have a reason.
Yeah. Goblin Slayer, which I'm not going to recommend to anybody. Look, if you would enjoy it, you've probably already heard about it and checked it out, so you're probably fine.
Yeah.
But it definitely tells the story of a man who is basically just an AD&D murder hobo. But he has a backstory and he has a goal, and that makes him interesting. And he works with others.
Yeah.
Which... Yeah, like, that's the bigger problem here, is that the super violent loot-grabbing tendencies of the murder hobo doesn't really work in a party setting.
Yeah.
Which is always an issue I have when it comes to the larger things like this. A lot of the, like, social meetings, like D&D Encounters or, like, the Pathfinder Society, their campaigns are set up in a way where this is just a group of bounty hunters that got hired to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, no, it's a job. Shut up. But in most sessions, it never really makes sense why you have a group of three or four relatively normal people who may know each other, and then, like, Darkness Blood Tongue, whose parents were killed by assassins, and now he's here to destroy everything.
I really like Darkness Blood Tongue.
I think we covered this in the death episode, and...
Which one?
You can definitely
The one
just...
we technically haven't recorded yet. Time travel.
Plane shift. So, the important thing is that you can come up with a backstory that ties in regardless. Oh, this is Darkness Blood Tongue. He's the queen's second nephew. And you have to take him with you because we don't want him in the palace anymore.
Man, season 9 of Game of Thrones is going to be rad.
Super down for that.
But
yeah.
The thing about murder hobos is outside of encounters, some sessions won't have combat, which gives them, if they just do that, functionally nothing to do.
Well, they're going to make combat.
They're
going to
make combat, but yeah, that's the problem. But
so, let's talk about how you encourage them not to make combat. So I've got the next two bits divided into the carrot and the stick. And the carrot is...
You explained this at the start, but...
After you...
No, okay.
Yeah, after you've created a world where... You know, these characters can exist as characters. You have to create some advantage to being a reasonable, not necessarily law-abiding, because you're still committing, like, tomb robbing as... You're committing to the idea of tomb robbing as a
profession.
Viable profession, and you're basically all of your marketable skills involve murder. But, like, someone who's societally positive, I think.
Right.
And the main way to do that is through the NPCs that the players interact with. And this can be, like, individual NPCs or a populace. But basically, just the idea of if they do good things, they interact with an NPC. And then that NPC has a positive relationship with them. Whether it's a blacksmith who gives them a discount or helps them secure magical items and stuff. And you can do things that were already within the rules, like... Oh, I want to buy a magical item. Well, you saved this blacksmith's daughter, and he isn't super great himself, but he reached out to his teacher, who's a master blacksmith in this city, who knows a wizard, and they were able to secure you a magical item.
Okay, so is this the part of the episode where I begin strawmanning the whole thing?
Yes.
Sure.
Good. So this part... Oh, that's interesting. Can I roll stealth really quick? I'm gonna just take it from him. I ain't got time for this. If they have it, I'm just gonna go get it.
I mean, my obvious counter to that would be don't have them have it.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, in this scenario especially, it was something that they were having, like, delivered to you after you paid for it. But,
like, when you're building a world for these kind of people in it, you have to take these tendencies into account. Never let the...
Don't put anything behind the easily breakable glass.
Yeah, if there's a payoff to doing an action, give it a time frame where it has to wait until, like, oh, yeah... I'll get you a new sword, buddy. Silvered steel, right? Yeah, that'll be 2 weeks.
Pay me now.
Pay me now.
Yeah, payment up front.
Yeah, payment up front. But you get a discount, bud. Yeah.
Payment up front. Give them time to deposit the money in the bank so it can't be stolen from the guy they're helping.
And you can't jump them right outside the door. So, yeah, you have to... This is going to sound bad, but you have to design around this inclination because the more it's not rewarded, the less they'll do it. It sounds like I'm talking about training my dog.
And you kind of are.
Well.
Look, they need to be rewarded for performing the right behavior, and you don't necessarily need to punish them for not behaving correctly, but you might need to punish them for behaving incorrectly. And we'll get to that in a second. I was going to talk about the other types of NPC investment. There's also... If you've managed to, and this can be a tall order, if you've managed to convince them to have a goal in the world, like, I want to be I want to become a knight, than having NPCs who have a positive opinion of them and the ability to help them advance their goal is huge. Like, oh, you did a quest for this guy, he's a knight, he has a positive opinion of you, he can help you become a knight, because that's what you need to do for this prestige class that you care about as a player or whatever.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's the thing that we should touch on. The benefits for being a good citizen of the world should not just be discounts or even particularly mechanical, right?
Yeah.
It can be something like they did, like, if they've been on good behavior for a really long time and maybe they did fall back into their old ways and did goof up and burn down a lumber mill, if they were good to people in the town, then you can have that, you can reward that previous good behavior by having those people vouch for them in a trial.
I actually just had this happen to me in a campaign that I'm playing. I'm playing a Legend of the Five Rings campaign, which is kind of a wushu mythic. Well, you're in luck. a wushu mythic Japan/China thing going on that's pretty fantastic. And my character has been just like a dependable hard worker this whole time in the middle of a group of yahoos and lunatics. And he's not weird, but he's definitely very effective. And he just received recognition for this and received a marriage offer from the Imperial family.
Okay.
Which is huge because the Imperial family does not marry outside of the Imperial family unless it's very, very advantageous to them.
Right.
And that's a social reward. And his goal is to be involved in a conflict large enough that when he dies during it, he will get a claim.
Sure.
And so that's a huge thing for him.
Right. But that's a very basic murder-centric goal, but you augmented it by being a helpful man to get that goal instead of just murdering everyone up until the point where you, I don't know.
Yeah. So what you're saying is his goal is to die in a cool battle. But he has worked towards that by being dependable, and now he's being rewarded by giving an opportunity to die to be closer to dying in a cool battle.
So I think what we're saying here is that murder hoboing only works if it's a long-term goal.
Kind of.
It works if it's an in-character lifestyle. If your player is a murder hobo, then their character's a lunatic. If your player is somebody who is playing a character who doesn't care for the world and is just kind of like a nihilistic, live-for-the-moment murder man, that can be an interesting character.
Right.
But that also, that's more of like a violent transient than a murder hobo.
Right. So the characters that work are kind of like, you know, the wandering swordsman or the gun, you know, the man in black. Like, those kind of semi-mysterious characters that they're fairly basic, but framing it in an in-game context instead of as a player makes all the difference with your interaction in the world.
Okay, now right? How much of this do you think comes from, like, those sort of ideas of, like, the wandering hero for hire, like, very serialized, I'm gonna go fix stuff in this place, and how much of it just comes from people that don't care and are just like, oh, this is like Skyrim, this is the part where I get bored and kill a whole town?
We're talking about the second one.
Fair.
Yeah, no, if you're the first one, then you can tell by how often, like, the flute music starts up while they're staring into the middle distance before they tell you what their character does.
I think, right. Actually, no, wait, this is kind of important here. The distinction comes between if just getting bored and stabbing, like, the king in the face is what the character wants to do, or what the player wants to do.
Right, so, this is...
Because if they even have the first thought, they're probably an okay player.
So this is topical and it's going to date it, but a really good example of this, because it just ended, and you guys, who cares? It's a TV show. Watch it in a timely manner. Bronn in Game of Thrones is the perfect example of a character played done well who's just a murder man. He's a sellsword, and he likes money, and I guess he likes brothels, and that's a little weird. But every decision he makes along the road to where he gets, which is to be, like, essentially a senator at the end of the series, is murder-centric and all about being a consummate mercenary. But his main goal is always to just make his life better. So he does a lot of really weird and bad and despicable stuff along the way. I love him, by the way. He's one of my three boys.
This is a great scene, because Suaga is the only
only one, and Braun is a great example of a character who could have very easily fallen into, like, the murder hobo hero for hire, but there's a pivotal scene where someone's like, I will give you so much money to kill two of your friends. And he's like, okay, well, I love money. And then he goes to his friends, and he's pointing a big crossbow at him, and he goes, look, you're my friends, and she's paying me a lot of money. What do you got? I'm not doing this because you're my friends, but what do you got? And they go, this? And he goes, cool, 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 cool. Cool, cool, okay, guys. See you later. And he, you know, he was down to murder, but still he was like, okay, they are my friends. Maybe they can make a counteroffer. Let's talk about it before I do the straight up point A to point B, you know, goal of mine.
Okay. Okay, so a lot of this, it feels like, is just... I was going to say, this isn't even, like, lowering player expectations. This is about creating the concept of expectations.
Right, like, the world has expectations, yeah, as like, well as the players.
You have to sit the player down and just be like, okay, so if you're going to just run around and stab every fourth person you see and take their coin purse, why?
Also, you're going to jail.
So, yeah, you're going to three jails.
We've moved into the third point I had, which is the stick. Before we get there, and as kind of a transition, I want to talk about Uli and Marquand.
Bless you.
They're characters from the Mordheim comic strip.
Jesus.
From Warhammer Monthly.
Congratulations, everyone listening! You found the deepest cut!
So, they're basically two murderous assholes who end up in a city filled with murderous assholes, and all they do are things that are murderous asshole to everyone around them. Most of the comics involve them, like, there'll be, like, six pages, and it'll be like, oh, we have to rescue this girl. Oh, man, she has such a cool diamond necklace. How much is this necklace worth? $200. How much is the girl? Are we being paid to rescue the girl? $100. She's heavy. Toss.
I was going to say, you get paid for both. What's the problem?
Well, they're, like, running away from someone. Or doing the, like...
So they're pulling the opposite of Conan.
Yeah. Or doing the, like, all right, on the count of three, me, you, and this guy we just met, we're going to jump out from behind this wall, and we're going to charge that guy with a crossbow. One, two, three, okay, four, go. and then it ends with them finding like a very cool, magical, expensive crown and being like, oh man, this is worth thousands of dollars. Awesome. Murder.
Well.
And then the guy goes, oh, you've murdered me. Please, I just want to drink that victory wine I was saving. No, I'm going to drink it. Ha, poisoned you. And then they both die. And in, like, a gutter. And that's about what you can expect as a murder hobo.
See, you don't want to do that, because that's when an entire dice bag gets thrown at your head. And that guy is never allowed back into the comic store.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move on to point three, which Matt calls the stick, in a very confusing use of carrot and stick.
I mean, it's the consequences.
That's not how carrot and stick work, though.
Like, no, the carrot is you go forwards, and the stick is you don't stop. Okay, so consequences... For being a murder hobo, I was thinking about this earlier, and unfortunately a lot of these don't work unless you can get some kind of initial investment. Because the main consequence is threats to take away and then following through on those threats.
That's actually important, a point.
Yeah.
If you do make an honest threat to a player's character, try and follow through with it. Like, it can feel bad because they're ostensibly your friends. But if you tell someone with no uncertainty that if you do this thing, X, Y, and Z happens, and they do the thing, always follow through with X, Y, and Z.
It's like parenting. But,
Actually been pointed out to me several times, trying to run a tabletop game is a lot like trying to be a teacher. I mean, much lower stakes, because the people you're talking to...
You're not molding young minds.
Yeah, it's that the people you're talking to are your age and your friends. So
I read a great Reddit thread commenting on a green text, multiple layers here, of somebody trying... The green text was somebody trying to figure out what the fuck their DM did for a living, because they kept, like, handing out stickers and telling people...
Oh, God, I read this stuff.
And then the Reddit thread was like, I like how these five grown men can't figure out that their DM is a kindergarten teacher.
She got them to shower and stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, I wish that wasn't such an issue.
Oh my god. Hey guys, take a shower.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, it's not that hard.
You're gonna be in public. Respect to that, please.
And public does mean anyone else's apartment other than your own. And if you're in your own apartment, be a good goddamn host and take a fucking shower.
Yeah, there are very few scenarios where you shouldn't have showered. I can't think of a good scenario where you can't have showered within 24 hours before playing the game.
Am I the only one who had to take a quick mental pause to check if they showered this morning?
I definitely didn't shower this morning, but I showered last night, and I am mostly just really stinky because I came from the gym. I'm sorry, guys.
It's not okay.
You can't smell it.
That's true.
You can't prove that.
Anyway, shower aside.
So, yeah, no, physical cleanliness aside, that's a different aspect of that guy, I think.
Tune in to episode 80. Wash your damn self.
We review different soaps.
Hope you're keeping track, because that's happening now.
I'm adding it. Go on, Matt. I'm adding it to the, to the spreadsheet.
So, if you get player investment in the world, and you don't have to just yank things away from people, the DM, are you sure, has always been one of our greatest tools. But if you have an NPC that the players have grown to like, a shopkeep, a bar maid, the knight who's tutoring them, and they're like, I'm gonna steal those gems! And you go, you know, if you do this, you'll almost certainly be caught. And,
why did Stinky Pete come out for that one? Toy Story, sorry.
I don't know. That's pretty good, though. You'll almost certainly be caught, and this guy will stop helping you. Or that girl your character likes will stop talking to you. This is gonna be public. That's more, compelling, I think, usually, than, like, you know you're probably gonna be arrested for this, right? Because arrest is just a new and exciting adventure, but you can never come back to this town with the cool, like, with the bartender who always has fun stories for you. That tends to mean something more, I think.
You know, like, thinking about these things, I'm going back and I'm like, I was probably a murder hobo in some campaigns that I thought went well. It's one of those hindsight things where you look back and, like, campaigns from, I don't know, high school or something. You're like, no, that was a lot of fun. We, like, went through here, and we got in the caverns, and fought the ancient demons, and were banned from every town we ever went to. Man, yeah. There were a lot of mobs in that game.
I feel like it's important to draw a line between murder hobos and rock star partying adventurers. Because there's definitely people who just throw a good party and, like, have a good time and get a little bit crazy, and they're not allowed back into, like, Williamsburg. But,
that's a real place.
Yeah. And I'm not going back there anytime soon. The moral of the story is that, you can... I'm not saying you weren't a murder hobo. I am saying...
I think I was in a party of them. I came into the game too late to do anything about it.
Yeah. You can tell good stories that still involve, like, explosions and nonsense. But if it's just like, I'm gonna steal all that guy's stuff and then murder him every time you see a character, like, any NPC, that's murder hobo.
But if you decide to buy out the entire inn's worth of mead and get everyone sick, nasty, drunk and start a giant bar fight, that's fun.
Yeah, there's been a carousing downtime activity in D&D since second edition.
And if that's a positive way for people to get their, I guess, wild side out without actually straight up murdering someone.
It kind of makes sense for a person who spends their life fighting skeletons in the dark to be like, you know what? I didn't die last time, and I have a 1,000 times what anyone in this town is going to make in 10 years. So, let's get fucking crunk.
Yeah, let's kick down the door of the fucking inn and be like, yo, dogs, I just got stabbed 8 times by 12 skeletons. Who wants to get fucking crazy?
What's up, motherfuckers? I'm gonna put down this glowing axe and you're gonna give me kegs until you feel it's worth it.
I'm gonna do a line of pixie dust off my own leg because it got cut off.
See, that's acceptable psychopathic behavior. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, everyone's having fun, I think, is the important distinction.
We're hitting some kind of weird, like, anthropology thing here, where we're establishing, like, our own version of a social contract.
So here's a good thing. Here's a good measure of what's going on. If everyone at the table laughs and hoots and claps, whatever that person's doing is probably fine, as long as within the tone of the game you're trying to run.
Yeah.
If a single person groans, or, you know, Moldweeble, or no one says anything, and we all just kind of look at our dice bags and kind of shuffle them around.
Or if the GM starts scrolling further down in their Word document to make sure they can make this work.
Yeah. If one person groans, it's probably fine, but you should ask some questions. If, like, everyone else at the table is quiet, well, the guy's like, I'm gonna do sex on that cow! then you definitely have to have a conversation with them.
Yeah. And that is getting into our...
We had a brief synthwave interruption there.
But we're actually encroaching into one of our other parts when we're talking about people groaning at the table.
You know, I'm not okay with the sentence, have a sex on that cow, is leading into our next episode.
But
we have to do this.
Right, yeah.
This is our cross to bear, apparently.
Look, we are delving into the worst excesses of persons playing role-playing games.
Of those guys.
Them folk.
Should we use a gender neutral term for that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because I've had to deal with both.
All right. So them folk.
Is guy gender neutral? That's not a call we're allowed to make. Anyways.
Well, I'm going to need to mull this over for a bit. So yeah. I think that might actually wrap up this episode. This is an ongoing series. We will help you with these people that you thought were your friends. No worries.
To recap, real quick, because I like doing the summaries. The first step is to ensure before the game starts that folks have an idea of both what your world is and what their character's place in it is. And what their character's working towards. Then, during gameplay, make your world alive enough and positive enough for the players that they want to protect it. And then if they start acting irresponsibly...
I don't know if protect is the right word, because we've definitely...
Protect their investment in it.
Yeah, that's true, because we've definitely run a criminal campaign I was desperately deeply invested in.
Yeah.
But we weren't exactly protecting the world. I learned to kill some shopkeep's daughter at a certain point. I'm pretty sure that's world negative behavior.
Yeah, right? But like, you don't pay like 100 gold to smack up some dude outside an alleyway. But your investment in the world was with garnering the respect of the people who were paying you to stab that dude in the chest with a chunk of broken 2x4.
That wasn't intended.
And again, that was a thing that there was a logical chain of events that your character felt was a justified action. You weren't just doing it because you, the player, were... done checking Twitter, and you're like, man, I want to break something.
I haven't killed anything in 20 minutes. The fact that you were sleeping on the top floor of a burned-out building with a lit, like a...
Pre-prepared.
Like a long-lit taper in one hand and a Molotov cocktail in the other was an important part of your character.
Right.
Is the top floor of a burned-out building just the ground floor?
No, there was no rafters left, I think.
Oh. Yeah. It was like the, you know, in every first-person shooter, when you walk into a room and there's like somehow the walls have fallen in such a way that there's like a perfect ramp up to the little walkway around the second floor. That's what you were sleeping on.
Yes. Tinder twig in one hand, oil and rag in the other.
Yep. Molotov cocktails have a long and storied history in our game.
They're such a good go-to item you can make with very little monetary investment.
Is Molotov a real person in all of your campaigns, then?
Look. Yes. Some of these campaigns are in, like, Earth or Future Earth, so yes.
We'll take that.
And I've definitely included, like, three real-world names in the campaign you guys are stuck in. I'm trying to remember what the other two are.
Molotov was a real person, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's Molotov, what
it's named. I did not actually about, like, know that. I know, but...
Yeah, that's why whenever they call it that in, like, in a not-Earth setting, it always bugs the crap out of me.
Huh.
Or, like, when people fire bow and arrows, that's not right.
I learned a thing. I guess you shoot bow and arrow?
You shoot, you loose an arrow, that's the other big one.
Because guns fire.
Mm-hmm. In volley loose. That's an important aside. Anyway.
I shoot him with the bow. I think that still works, right?
Shooting is...
Yeah, shoot works. We've been shooting since we could launch things.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Ah, shoot. I played a campaign for quite a while that was also supposedly criminal-focused, although only me and one other character actually made criminals. Everyone else was accused of a crime they didn't commit.
Lame.
Hey, Mr. T is still pretty cool, thank you.
Look, the A-Team is great, but two of us were pirates, and everyone else had either had to commit a crime in order to save someone, or been accused of a crime they didn't commit. And we were just definitely pirates.
So, basically, you guys were stuck in, like, one of the newer Suicide Squad comics, and you were playing as Captain Boomerang.
Yeah.
You're just like, yeah, but crime.
Yeah, I just crime, and that's why I'm here. That's how this works. Crime.
Why are you in the pokey? Oh, I had to kill someone to save my brother and an orphan. Why are you in? I robbed a bank.
Yeah,
a gun.
It's where the gold is, guys. Have you tried? Normally, it goes better than this.
I shot like a lot of people. No, but I was playing a pirate who did pirate crime before he became part of the campaign. But he had a goal, and it was to overthrow the government because they'd hung his adoptive father, who was the other pirate's actual dad, for piracy.
Well,
and also treason, both of which he had actually done.
I like that this went from an episode on how to avoid sociopath characters into a lecture on how to properly be a sociopath.
Well, it's about not being a murder hobo. My character had a stated goal and a long-term plan and continually lied to most of the rest of the party about whether or not the things we were doing furthered that long-term plan because he was trying to rob people.
So I think the takeaway from that long aside is someone that appears to be a murder hobo at first glance can be guided into making a good functional character by a DM who knows what to look out for and knows how to incentivize being an actual character if that player knows the ropes of how to do it right.
It's also possible that something that you've taken as a murder hobo has a greater ideal, and that's why you need to ask them, like, what are the goals of your character? What's their backstory?
Sit down and have a conversation, even if it's away from the table, even if you text them later. Even if you do it during the mandatory 20-minute break I take every 2 hours when I DM. But, yeah, it's not... Someone appearing as a murder hobo is not is immediately damning. But if they end up being exactly what you thought they are, go ahead and, you know, either try and lead them away or just throw them out the window.
Corollary to the corollary, if their backstory is, I hate elves and that's why I'm trying to kill all of them, or their backstory is, I'm a crazy person, so I'm going to roll a D percentile to see if I stab every NPC Jesus I come across.
God, that guy.
fuck that guy real hard.
Was that a real thing you all dealt with?
Yes.
Yes.
Holy fuck, really?
Yeah.
Yes. Obviously, that's a shit character. And they are... The idea of a good backstory and goal for a character is a character who could reasonably have gotten to the point they exist currently in the world. So if a character has like a... If they're like, oh, I've got a 30% chance of attacking everyone I meet. No, you're in a mental hospital. I'm sorry, you're going to have to play the whole campaign from there.
That's
or like,
point.
I hate elves and I'm going to murder them. Okay, cool. I'm sorry, your character was murdered by elves at age, like, 12 when they attacked one with a toothpick, so, like, you're out. Make a new character.
Yeah, that's a good point, because remember, all these characters exist in the world before the campaign starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't just spring into being as an edgelord serial killer.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for years, and if it seems like what you're doing is impossible to maintain, you're boned.
Dexter is the show Dexter. Have you guys watched Dexter?
Nope.
No, cool.
Usually on the laboratory variety?
No.
Shitty Athena. But
Dexter is a serial... The main character is a serial killer, but his whole life led up to being an efficient serial killer.
Okay.
And disguising that fact of himself. So it makes sense for him to be a serial killer, because he has an entire lifetime of his reasons and his motivations and his methods.
And I assume he doesn't just, like, grab every random person he meets and put them in the murder chair.
Oh, no, part of his code is the only people he puts in the murder chair are bad people.
Like other murderers,
usually. Because his adopted father was a cop.
His actual dad is a murderer, and I think part of the show later. Wasn't that guy his dad?
Dog, I don't know. I watched Dexter a long time ago.
There was some shit about, like, a hurricane in the last episode.
Yeah.
It got stupid.
They compared that to Game of Thrones a lot recently.
Ooh, that's harsh. Does Lost get thrown into that conversation as well?
Yes.
Usually.
Ouch.
Anyway, I saw the Ballad of Buster Scruggs meme with the guy being hung, and it's just Lost fans talking to Game of Thrones fans. Just like, oh, first time?
So, to wrap up.
Again.
A character initially seeming like a murder hobo is an indictment of the character or the player. There are ways to move them in a productive direction, but if it does become an issue, check in with them, make sure they understand what they're doing, because some people don't understand what they're doing in a social situation. Like, we all have anxiety and hang-ups and stuff, and maybe that's that person's way of interacting with people. Like, oh, I don't care because I'm less anxious when I don't care. They're like, hey, I get it, you're anxious, but we're all here to be cool friendos pretending to be elves. So
we've all made at least one terrible decision based on our own combination of obliviousness and, like, hyper-energy inside of an RPG.
Right.
Like, no, I do this thing. Okay, that's a terrible plan. Don't care, gotta do it. It's what my character would do!
So, yes, the last step before you make some drastic action as a DM is just talk to them as a person. And that's going to come up a lot, I think, over the course of this podcast. Because part of being a DM is being open and understanding that the people that, at least when we started playing, the people that gravitated toward this hobby were kind of, they were weird. We're
fucking weirdos.
So, and because of that, everyone has their hang-ups, and this hobby can be very therapeutic. But, you know, just talk with them, because their actions vis-a-vis being this kind of person, like I had someone say to me recently, oh, I usually play a character who doesn't give a fuck about anyone else in the campaign. I want to dig down to why that is before I start saying, no, before I start excluding him from sessions I'm running in the future, you know?
See, I'm just old and tired, so my initial response to that sentence was, well, then you're not in mine.
Right.
Initial response was, well, the four people I played this game with wouldn't do that, so I guess I'm fine.
Well, yeah, but my point is, if it's happening and they have a reason and you can drill down on it with them, you can work it out. But that's not always the case. Some people are just assholes.
And next week, we'll figure out what to do about that. So I am legit going to wrap this up, because we've tried 3 times now.
Right. Okay.
Look, I'm Matt.
I'm Alex.
Robert.
Thank you for listening, and don't split the party unless one of us is a murder hobo and you can reasonably just ignore their part of it.
Oh, hey, guess what, guys? We got an email that Matt forgot. Alex, hit us with that email.
Yeah, we had to do the cleanup, man. It's important. I got a Twitter now.
Hit us with the Twitter and the email, Alex.
Yeah, they are actually the same. Easy enough. If you have anything you want to bring up to us, they will mostly be complaints. I understand this. You'll want to hit us up either at thegmscreen@gmail.com or just over at Twitter at thegmscreen. I got locked it down. I feel proud of that.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, guys, thank you for listening. We always appreciate you tuning in, even though all 4 of you aren't.
And also, 3 of them are us.
And 3 of them are... Well, you don't listen to it. yeah. I hate Matt's ending, so bye. Fuck you, Matt.